Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we have got a most unique subject that we're going to be discussing. My guest is Gary Wymer, and the subject is lithomancy. Have you ever heard of it? Well, the term is not one that you hear mentioned very often in conversations. It is the psychic art of reading stones. Gary, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna. I'm honored.
Well, I am so pleased to have you on the air because having been in the work of mind for so many years, it has always intrigued me, the various modalities, where the skills of the intuitive self can be demonstrated. And the art of reading stones is something that you don't hear about very often. And you have been involved in doing psychic work and doing this with people for a long time, and you've done this in Europe as well as here. Gary, how in the world did you get involved with stones? I mean, there's so many more common modalities. How did you get involved with this?
Well, I first got interested in psychic phenomena in college, reading a lot of Edgar Cayce, Madame Blavatsky, and things like that. Started giving readings with basically just a regular deck of cards, and I started giving those because I was trying psychic experiments. You know, can you guess the card I'm looking at, blah, blah, blah. Then I started doing tarot cards a little bit and using other methodologies. In 1980, I met a lady named Alice Warhol, who I've dedicated the book to. And she did a reading for me using stones. She called it a stone reading. I was utterly fascinated by it. I'd never seen it. But the fact that it was so revealing and so powerful and so unique, and that it was so based on intuition rather than strict rules. It's all interpreting how stones land, how they touch each other, what they mean. And, of course, through that symbolism of looking at the pattern and understanding the symbolism, very relevant information comes about over a period of time, and that's what fascinated me. The readings, the standard method is 16 stones dropped into a circle, and the way they land you gives you the information. I start at the circle, the center of the circle, read up till 12 o'clock, and then around for 12 hours, each hour representing a week. So I was fascinated by the methodology. She taught me how she did it, and I've done it for, 30 years, 31 years now. I was living in Europe in the 90s, and I came back here in 2000 and was curious how other people did it. I couldn't find anything on the Internet about it, which absolutely fascinated me. I thought, wow, surely reading stones, there's people who do that. And I couldn't find anything on it, so I thought, well, I'll write a book on it. And that basically, in a nutshell, is what happened.
Well, this is a discipline, and I wanted to ask you a question. You may not even be able to answer this. Alice Warhol, you have a wonderful picture of her in the book, the lady you've just mentioned that helped you to learn how to work with the stones. Is she by any chance related to Olga Warhol?
I don't really know. She's out of town right now. She's seeing her son in Virginia, I think. I could sure ask her when she comes back. What's the name? Olga?
Olga. And the reason I'm asking is because Olga Warhol was one of the finest healers that you could ever want to know about. And I just wondered if they were related in some way. If so, that would be a fascinating link. Yes,
I'm
and Olga
sure.
lived up in the, well, I'd say in the New England area, I believe. I may not be remembering that correctly.
Not sure. I will ask her when I get back, and I will let you know.
Oh, that would be fascinating. Now, Gary, I wanted to go into a little bit of information. Your book is about stones. It is about various applications of same. Let's talk about lithomancy from the point of the stones themselves, because everything has its own energy frequency. Let's go into where the word comes from and how far back it was used as a form of divination.
There's not much history on it. That's what I was sort of baffled by. There's a lot of history on astrology and tarot. In fact, there's a lot of books on them. Astrology, tarot, palmistry, you name it, runes. I couldn't find hardly any information about lithomancy. I'm sure there's some around, but I was just doing what was available on the Internet, and this was basically 10 years ago. Most of the information on Wikipedia and elsewhere is stuff that I've submitted, basically.
Interesting.
So there wasn't a whole lot of research available. I found pieces of it here and pieces of it here. But it's believed it's probably one of the most ancient systems around because of archaeological evidence. And it is believed by who, I don't know, but it is believed by certain people who study these things, I suppose, that it probably was through carving on stones originally from used in some sort of stone or stick readings that people developed runes and probably developed the first written languages. There's not proof of that, but there's not much history about it, and that's what's speculated. It's believed to be a pretty old system. How it went from there to the system I learned, I don't know. I can tell you how I learned it from Alice. She learned it from a lady 40 years ago when she was being tested at a major university. Another psychic showed her. That lady had learned it somewhere in the East. It probably became it became more popular in the Celtic cultures in the, whatever year they were, 1600, 1800, I'm not sure, maybe earlier than that. But there's not much history on it, and that's kind of frustrating. So I wish I could find more history on it. But at some point, I just gave up and thought, okay, well, I'm going to write a book basically on how to use the technique rather than try to find history that is not verifiable, first of all, and pretty rare to begin with.
I agree. In the African culture, the throwing of bones and different items has been around forever. I don't even think they would know when that originated. So I think your statement about this being very, very old is true. And in my
experience, I think it is, because there's similarity in these methods. It's looking at the symbolism and the pattern.
Right. So there's something there. Now, you use typically 16 stones.
Correct.
And you say you interpret the information from the pattern that is formed when the reader or the person that the reading is for holds the stones, focuses on a question, they concentrate on their concern, and then drops or tosses 16 stones into a circle of leather, lace, string, or something similar. Why is the circle used?
Well, the circle represents the environment. It's a clock. It's analogous to a clock, I suppose. And it so happens, because of pure physics alone, about a foot circle, a foot in diameter, works because it's big enough for the stones to land but not be too scattered. And, you know, if you try to drop them in a four-inch circle, it'd be very difficult. Why have a two-yard circle where people... So the idea of a circle represents a clock. And it represents the environment, but the circular part of it, I read in terms of hours reflecting each week. So it represents the environment. It's and how stones interrelate to it is very important. If a stone lands on it, for example, it could mean that stone. For example, if Mars lands on the circle, say, at 1 o'clock, Mars's male energy could probably in some form or another, in fact, in some form or another, does imply, if not emphatically state, that there's pressure from some male energy on the environment in the second week, because it's landing on the environment and Mars is male energy. And that could be anything from a war to a bad business project, the details of which come out intuitively. But the idea of how they land, where they land, in relationship to each other, in relationship to the circle, if they clutter together and four or five stones make a little, what I call a cluster. Mm-hmm. That means all these energies are interrelated. Each stone has its own story to tell, so to speak, and so does the whole cluster together. If stones point to each other, I see that as a reference. If they lean in certain ways and certain characteristics of a stone point to something. So it's really looking at the visual geometry more than wondering about what the gemology of the stone is. It's looking at the geometry of the pattern and seeing what it's telling you, because it does symbolically represent the situation at hand, which by default is the 3 months in the person's life. What fascinates me is the stones always land in the right place. Now, I do always tell people, if they're dropping them, if I'm doing in person, about how high to drop them from, just so they don't land all over the room or don't land in one little pile like a fist, that it's hard to separate things in terms of time. Mm-hmm. So there's an appropriate height just because of physics. But the pattern that is formed is it's so revealing. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing to me, because I can go on for an hour and a half on one pattern, looking in the past lives of people, other things, all sorts of things, just with this as being a sort of a door opener or a door, mm-hmm. so to speak. The default is the 3 months, but I've done readings for people on books, on stories, on businesses. I've thrown extra stones in for extra people or different situations. As I say in the book over and over and over, here's the basic idea. Experiment. You know, mm-hmm. Use the system and your own intuition. Stretch the bounds, so to speak. People are stretching the bounds by just checking into psychic ability anyway, so stretch the bounds of your own system, right? Why not?
Absolutely.
And it's a win-win-win.
Yes, it is. And one of the things that's very nice about your book, Gary, is that you have a number of different charts or circle charts that a person could copy, and they could just use those to practice with if they wanted to. And
correct.
I think a great way, because it's been my experience and observation that for someone to really become skilled, they must practice. This is something that you can be born with a talent, an innate talent, but it's not going to really do very much for you unless you practice with it on a regular basis. Now,
Not only is it all based on practice and utilization of your gift, but people with a great gift who don't practice, I'll say it this way, people with a minor gift who do practice will come out way ahead of people with a great gift who don't practice.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I mean, Mark Phelps didn't swim as well as he did just because he had two legs and two arms. He did because he worked on it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
so diligent.
Absolutely true. Mm-hmm. Very true. Now, let's talk about choosing stones. This is something that I think bears some attention. It's not just going out, well, I guess you could go out into your backyard, pick up whatever happened to be handy, wash it off, let it dry, and then use that.
Well, I actually have, Donna. I've done exactly that before. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can do that. It's all symbolism. But I didn't mean to interrupt, but that was a good point for me to bring out right then.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But you like to choose stones based on what?
Based on probably the things that most people think of when they think of little stones. Are they pretty? Are they cute? I like stones with color that are colorful. I like them with characteristics. In other words, a bunch of yellow marbles that all look the same, don't have near as much intrigue and mystery and direction and characteristics that can point things out as stones that are jagged and different colors. And so I like strange stones. In my book, I suggest, you know, if you want a stone for the sun, pick maybe something gold or yellow. But that doesn't mean you can't use an orange or pink or black stone for the
mm-hmm.
sun.
Again,
it's all symbolism. But symbolism more is, if you look at a picture and it's got a lot of colors and things on it, has a lot more symbolism than does a white piece of paper, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So absolutely it gives you more to draw from. The more characteristics your stones have, the more... because all the time when I'm doing a reading, I notice a little part of a stone just pointing to something, and I can't even express into words why it triggers some knowledge about something by just looking at that. Because as I do a reading, I'm actually looking at the stones. I'm letting
mm-hmm.
them tell me. It's
mm-hmm.
that simple, basically.
Now, you have 6 personal stones. I'm just sharing this with my audience so that when and should they get your book, then they're going to have a little bit of an understanding. You use different stones to get different information. That's how I'll phrase it. You have life, magic, love, luck, and commitment and place. Now, these are
mm-hmm.
the 6 personal stones, and each of them has a particular meaning, and this is something that when you would choose a stone relative to each one of those, it would have a significance for someone. Then you have 10 planet stones. You have, you know, the sun, the moon, and you've got the sun, you know, Mercury, you've got Venus, you have all of these different stones here. But you go into detail on each of these aspects, both the personal as well as on the planetary. And it also is fascinating that in the information that you give in your book, let's just take, for example, let's see which stone, Venus. Let's just take the stone that would represent Venus. You go into a lot of it, but you have different things. You say there are keywords with a stone, what gender it relates to, and Venus obviously is the feminine. You have triggers for relations, places, actions, positive and negative traits, body parts that this particular stone refers to, the day of the week. There's just so many things that you have gotten in here. It was a lot of work to be able to be this detailed. How long did it take you to do this book?
Well, it's taken me a decade. I started in 2000 when I came back from Europe. So it basically took me a decade to compile information, to sort it out, to edit it. And I've even noticed, like I was telling you, there's a couple errors in it that I will be changing on the book I'm working on right now. A couple of errors. I went, oop, I didn't realize that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Minor errors, but things that will, you know, a verb missing maybe that everybody saw. But, yeah, I did spend a lot of time compiling this information. And the most of the information under the stones is pretty common in most astrology books because it's basically each planet and each stone represents a planet, and that planet basically, so all the things associated with that stone are also associated with all the astrological meanings behind the planet. Venus, for example, represents love and balance and also represents women and relationships and social things and harmony and pleasure and money and all sorts of different things, as does the planet Venus. The six personal stones, there's not as much of a definition given to them because they're a little more flexible. The ten planet stones based on astrological symbols, they've been compiled for thousands of years, and that symbolism works, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So why change it? Accept it. The six personal stones are probably a lot more flexible interpretation is sort of the way I look at it. But when I read them, I don't see them necessarily as planet stones or personal stones. I just read the pattern. For example, the commitment stone could land right next to Mars. I don't think of them as being, I think of them as commitment in Mars, not as a planet stone or a personal stone. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it's always the relationship they have to each other in the pattern. Not sure I answered the question. Was that on target, or did I wander off somewhere?
Well, let's go into something here, because we've already mentioned that in doing the reading, you use something to create a circle, and you say a circle needs to be a foot in diameter so that the stones have a place.
Yeah,
you don't want to have it 6 inches, because it's going to be too small. You're going to need to have a foot in diameter. And in your book, you used a photo of a stone throw that went within a string circle. And I think that's a very efficient way of doing it. It wouldn't take up much space. And if someone wanted to do this with people and wanted to travel with them, all you need is a little pouch for your stones, and you could have a piece of string, and you're all ready to go.
Amen.
The circle here is just interesting, because you say, not only do you have the circle, and in the book you have the grayscale, you don't have everything in vivid color in the book, but on your website you do have everything in color, so people can look at that if they want to, and of course all of my listeners are very computer literate. But you talk about the stones, and there's an aspect of being able to do a reading with the stones in the circle, but what if someone throws those stones, Gary, and they fall outside the circle? What does someone do?
Well, I instruct people basically how high to drop them so they don't end up in, like I said, one little fist in the middle or all scattered over the room. But anything other than between that is fine. Some will invariably land outside the circle, and that's fine, because what they represent outside the circle are one of two possibilities and or both, beyond the three-month period or beyond the environment. And the closer they are to the circle, the more they feel like they're just beyond the environment. And the further they are from the circle, the more they feel in general like they're further ahead in time. And again, it's an intuitive thing. And the reason I say that, because say you have a Mars stone next to the play stone outside the circle, or anywhere for that matter. If it's outside the circle, it could represent things beyond the environment, a new place associated with mail or energy or work. Or could it say that about those same things further in the future, beyond this three-month period? If they were in the middle of the circle or somewhere in the circle, the stones could mean the same thing in one instance, but you could also look at those same two stones inside or out of the side, together or independently, and get use one as a reference point, use the other reference as a point, use them both as a reference point. So there's all one stone can represent a lot of different things in a lot of different situations, depending on how you look at it, depending on how you view it, depending on the question asked. So, like the moonstone represents everything from emotions to the public to female to daily opportunities and duties, responsibilities, you know, and nighttime. So, what does it mean? Well, it means all those. And but you can't cover all that in 30 minutes. That's why a reading can go for an hour, because I'll start seeing other levels of what that stone means. Maybe it meant, maybe it also represents a mother in a past life, and that starts coming through. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Well, you also have an illustration in your book where you say stones under the circle. Now, that interested me. What do you mean by stones under the circle? Because when I'm looking at the illustration, you have one in this illustration, and it's like it went under the string somehow. But
well, string or leather or thread, I suppose if you put down something real strong and heavy and firm, nothing could get under it. But even with a little thin piece of leather, which is thinner than the leather I'm using in the book, I made that a little bit bigger for so you could see it easily. I use a pretty thin piece of leather, and I try to lay it, you know, relatively flat, but it does have contours in it, ups and downs. And a circle can get under it at certain places. It can certainly land on it. It can land next to it. It can touch it. It can hover right near an opening in it, or maybe just the opening in the circle itself, independent of stones, is showing an opportunity. Right as I'm saying this, I'm looking at the circle right now, and it's got a little opening at 9 o'clock. Perhaps in a certain reading for a certain person, that might mean an opening to the future in the ninth week. So again, whether it's under it or on it, there's all different ways to look at it. The pictures in the book don't imply or don't show the curvature up and down of the material, so it looks like it would be impossible to slip under it, but it really isn't.
Well, that's why I brought it up, because you mentioned
right.
it in the book.
I never thought about putting that in that my book, and thank you for mentioning it, because I might just go add that point. Because, it's a two-dimensional image. You can't see the ups and downs that would normally occur in leather. And even in those pictures in the book, I made the same piece of leather. It's almost a perfect circle to make things visually appealing. If I took a picture every time I wanted to give example, the lighting would be different. I'd have to. It's just got too complicated to make them look readable and easy. So I used a template for everything.
Gary, you have obviously a very strong dedication to this, and you are only the second person I have ever met that reads stones. I've met individuals that read sand. I have met individuals that will toss coins, or like the Yarrow sticks with the I Ching. There have been many different applications. I'm waiting for someone to come up with buttons myself. I mean, there's just no end to the tools that can be utilized. But I do know, and I'll share this with my audience, of a woman that was taught by her grandmother to read stones, and she's done it for many, many years. So I'll make sure that I put you in touch with her, Gary, because I think the two of you would really enjoy talking with each other. There's very, very few people that I'm aware of that do that. And
no, there aren't many.
Every
time I work at a psychic fair, there may be, you know, anywhere between 15 and 30 readers there. I'm the only one who's ever there reading stones. I had no idea it was so unknown until about 10 years ago.
Now, Gary, You state in the back part of your book that you're not able to do readings for yourself. Some intuitives are able to do it. Some don't want to do it. But many are like you that say they cannot do it. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, specifically, I can't necessarily read stones for myself because for this simple reason, I can't be detached from myself that long. If I do readings for myself, I draw cards real quick. I don't even have to think about detachment. I just think of something, draw a deck. So that's how I give myself readings. It takes prolonged detachment to objectivity to effectively read for someone. And if I'm just cutting a deck of cards split second, I don't even have the time to debate that. Whereas if I'm trying to read for myself, I know my life, and I know what I hope this stone might represent. It's hard to separate that from, it's hard to be objective. That's the reason. I can read for myself in other ways, but I can't keep prolonged detachment and objectivity for 5 or 10 minutes. Now, what I do is I take pictures sometimes of the way the stones drop and then look through over the next couple weeks. Oh, this meant this, so it helps me understand. Maybe in the future I'll be better at reading for myself. I don't know. But it's a matter of purely a matter of being able to detach yourself and be objective for a prolonged period of time, which is probably more than five, you know, two a minute or so. It's hard. Try it for 20 seconds. It's difficult, you know.
That's true. It can be a real challenge for just about anybody, and I think that detachment is very important because so often we'll put lenses, mental lenses, in the way, and we may not see things very, very well. Now, Gary, you have had intuitive abilities ever since you were a child, and there was a significant accident that you had in February of 1977 that gave you a very profound near-death experience. But you have chosen to do this, and this is really a fascinating topic. How can people find out more about you? What is your website, Gary?
My website is garywimmer.com. That's my home page. From there, you can go to my psychic page. Lithomancy, it's all over the front page there. Or you can go to garywimmer.com/psychic, P-S-Y-C-H-I-C. If they can't remember that, they can always Google Reading Stones, because Gary L. Wimmer will come up on the first of Reading Stones somewhere in the first, you know, couple hits on Google. And from there, you'll either get a link to my book or a link to my website or something. So either Gary Wimmer, Gary L. Wimmer, Reading Stones, or garywimmer.com/psychic. And there they can see exactly what I do. There's quite a lot of information about how I read stones, my history, why I got involved on it, what I see, what to expect, what I believe. And as far as the book, there's a link to the book, A Second in Eternity, from there. Yes, I did have an incredible experience in 1977. Amazing, amazing experience. And a little bit of it is explained on my website there once you click to the book I'm writing on it. It's probably the most phenomenal experience I've ever had. Certainly it is I've ever had. Probably one of the most phenomenal anybody could have, because I literally, in an accident, went out, did go through this tunnel of light, people explained, saw the mind of God, or was in it, or was one with it for either a millisecond or an eternity. I can't tell the difference. They were the same. There was no time. Once I realized I was witnessing it, I was pulled back. I had succumbed to independence again and felt myself being drawn away from there and pulled back through this tunnel line and pulled back into this galaxy, and then into, as the closer I got to Earth, the more I felt like, wow, I've got something to do with this place. And bam, I ended up in the middle of a street. I had just been hit by a car, a speeding car. Didn't even get a scratch. Didn't even get hurt. Most amazing experience of my life. And there wasn't much talk, there wasn't much conversation about out-of-body experiences in tunnel light in 1977. So I just kind of, you know, I knew what I experienced. But I didn't really think much about it, about exposing it or talking about it, till 1997 in Europe one night before I was performing. I explained it to these people what happened. They said, you ought to write a book about that. So I started in February 7th, 1997, the 23rd anniversary of when it happened. And I'm just now re-editing again. Like I said, I don't write books in a week. I take 10 years to write them.
Well, that'll give you something to do when you're not, you don't have anything else on your mind.
Gary, oh, probably will.
Gary Wimmer has been my guest today, and his book, Lithomancy, is really interesting. Check out his website, Gary Wimmer, that's GaryWimmer.com. Gary, it's been a delight having you as a guest. I wish you nothing but the best. Thank you so much. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Thank you, Donna.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number you can call into if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then let me tell you what I perceive. 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Patrick Robinson, the Delta Solution. The Delta is representative of the Navy SEALs. This is a dynamic publication, and it definitely keeps you on the edge of your mind-reading seat. It is dynamic. So we're going to be talking with Patrick tomorrow. And then next week, we are going to be talking about some real interesting subject matter. We're going to be talking with Ann Dee, who is a pharmacist herself, and her book is titled The Best Pharmacist. This is going to be discussing something that you don't hear about very often, and that is narcotic addiction in the medical profession. Usually this is something that is really kept under wraps. It's something that we don't consider, but it is a major problem, and so that's what her publication is all about. Tuesday, we're going to have The Best of Donna. And there are some things I have to take care of. And then Steve Elder, How Much More Longer? This is a wonderful publication. And then we're going to be talking with Deidre Capone next week. Her uncle is Al Capone. I should say was Al Capone because he's been gone for a long time. But her story is an amazing one. She is a lovely woman. I met her when I was in New York, and I'm looking forward to having her tell some secrets and points of information about Al Capone that nobody has known about prior to her book. And then on Friday, a week from tomorrow, we'll be discussing the powerful medicine of vitamin D. Yes, and this is a publication written by Lucinda Messer. So we've got some dynamic information. And by the way, the list on all of my guests has gone up on the BBS site. So when you go to the Donna Sebo Show, tap on the show information button, and you'll be able to find out about the wonderful people that will be coming up this month. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I found a quote from Beethoven that I just absolutely loved. And, of course, we all know that he was this awesome, awesome musician that would hear music in his head nobody else could hear and was able to transpose that onto paper and then have orchestras play these phenomenal sounds. But this is what he said. He said, "From the glow of enthusiasm, I let the melody escape. I pursue it. Breathless, I catch up with it. It flies again. It disappears. It plunges into a chaos of diverse emotions. I catch it again. I seize it. I embrace it with delight. I multiply it by modulations, and at last I triumph in the first theme. There is the whole symphony. There is the whole symphony." Fascinating man. It describes in words what he was feeling. And intuition is so much like that. You know, we've been talking about lithomancy, the reading of stones, but there's this essence in life. And I will tell you something that I have observed, that if you are wanting to develop your own intuitive talents, using a tool is one of the best things you can ever do. It helps you to detach. Like I said, I've known people that did sand readings. I've known people that have used all kinds of tools, whether it's cards or pictures or whatever, to stimulate the psyche to give information. You see, we're all senders and receivers, every single one of us. Lots of times there has been in the past the statement, oh, you can only be a sender or you can only be a receiver, especially when it came to telepathy. Well, that's a bunch of hooey. The key is we have to know how to turn ourselves into that positioning of mentally saying, I'm open and receptive for this. Now, we also have to be discerning because you don't want to become a garbage can for the universe. You don't want all the people's gunk mentally floating around. You want to be sure to have dominion over your own receptivity to a degree. But it happens in so many different ways. With all of the counseling I've done through the years and all of the different people, thousands and thousands of people, whose paths have crossed with mine through the years, every single one of them have a story to tell me about an intuitive experience. Every single one of them have something to share, and it is unique to the way that their mind works. That sounds strange, but when I've taught classes, I've seen this demonstrated over and over again. There may be similar patternings, but I think one of the greatest frustrations when it comes to developing your intuitive processing is that you may want to be just like someone else, and you go, oh, I can't do what they're doing, so I'm a failure. That's not it. You need to find that mechanism that works for you. I've known people that have found certain environments in nature to be exactly what they need to give them the trigger that they need. I have found people, again, as I mentioned a moment ago, using various tools. It doesn't make any difference. It is your own personal rhythm and your own personal association that counts. So if you or someone like Gary, who has the opportunity to maybe learn a particular technique from someone, it's always good to be open and willing to learn. But don't be surprised if you decide you want to adapt it to your own methodology. And that's perfectly okay. It really is. And anyone who is truly a fine teacher always wants their students to go far beyond what they have ever shared with them, because that's the way life is. So if you find yourself curious, and you say, gee whiz, Donna, I'd really like to know how to develop this, I'll share with you one of the first things that my mentor many years ago told me, and that is to read. And I know in today's world, texting seems to have the first and foremost place, but I am saying it is important to read. Go to secondhand bookstores. If you've got a little budget and maybe don't even have much of a budget, go through your library. You will be amazed at the publications that have been put out through the years that are loaded with information. Authors like Jean Dixon, Gina Siminara, Thelma Moss, there's just so many. I mean, they're just running through my mind by the dozens. But these are people that set the pathway for us today. We are able to discuss this more openly than many years ago. It wasn't possible. In fact, you often were ostracized and put down, and a lot of people were put in mental institutions because people thought they were nuts. They aren't. Remember, the development of any skill, as Gary said, takes practice, and you need to find that arena of interest that you have, that you are comfortable with, and work with it. I've known some people that like Ouija boards. Personally, they drive me nuts. They're too slow, and that is so boring. It just takes so long. You have to have a secretary sitting next to you writing everything down. But it might be a beginning tool for someone. Using cards. There's a plethora of card decks out there. Whatever resonates for you. Remember, what you're trying to develop, whether it's stones, cards, grass clippings, or the entrails of a chicken, who cares? Don't laugh at that. The Greeks and the Romans used entrails. Yes, they did. They did all kinds. Even in Jewish history, that was done. I mean, there's so much stuff that's been going on for eons that people like to ignore. It's a part of human culture. So whatever works for you is fine. You can even use a bowl of water, a glass of water. You can use a mirror. There's all kinds of tools that you can use. But it is really good to become educated about it. It is good to find out what other people's terminologies have been. So as you are learning and you are growing as an individual, remember, it's good to explore. It's good to question. You're going to find some people that are really ding-dongs, and I mean that. They are, I wouldn't even call them off in fairyland. That's an insult to the fairies. I wouldn't do that. These are people that want something so much that they'll make up everything, and they really don't know what they're talking about. They're parroting things. But when you find someone that is really sincere and dedicated to whatever skill they're demonstrating, you're going to find they're going to be very open with you. They're not going to be trying to hide any secrets. They are going to recognize in you your desire to learn. And in that respect, there is a trust that will be built, and many times there is a lot that is shared in that trust that you cannot put words to. I know, because I had that very personal experience with my mentor, who I have a great deal of respect and appreciation for even to this day. Remember to be discerning, be willing to learn, and understand that you have an essence called life within you that is going to want to express itself in its highest and best form. Don't be afraid to be open to new experiences, new learnings, and the wonder of the unknown. That definitely is what getting into the intuitive space does. Well, here we are in the month of June, and I have in front of me what I considered one of the grossest pictures I've ever come across. Oh, it's a picture of two Asian young people getting married. The bride looks absolutely gorgeous. She's got this gown on. She's got the veil. She's got diamonds and pearls. And then you look at her face and you go, oh, my goodness, this has to be out of a Hollywood movie, because she has a painting of, it's like blood dripping down her eyes. And then the guy has a centipede in his hand. The head of the centipede is in his mouth. I mean, this is something. When I looked at this picture, I went, oh, gross. But I had to share it with you. This is Bun Tawi Siang Wang and Kanjana Ketiao, who tied the knot for marriage on February the 14th in 2006 at Pattaya Beach Resort in Thailand. Now, this was the highlight of their wedding. You know, here, June is the month of weddings, but this is the farthest out stuff I've ever seen. The highlight of this Thai wedding, and the groom has this magnificent suit on, his face is painted white. It had the chanting monks. There were centipedes and scorpions. The wedding room took the shape of a coffin, and the bride's 32 days spent in a plastic cage with 3,400 scorpions. Just reading it gives me the willies. In 2002, can only be matched by the groom's 28 days in a cage with 1,000 centipedes in 2003. Well, I guess you'd say that was a match made. I don't know what kind of heaven, but it's buggy to me. It's really far out. So, I liked the other version of weddings, but boy, they did set a record with that, and they got a lot of attention. Yes. Wonder how the guests felt about all the bugs. Anyway, believe it or not, that is what happened with this couple and the really good-looking young people. Just a little different. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, on to a happier tone, without bugs. I wanted to share a story with you about a woman. Her name is Gemma Cocker. Now, this is a woman who is an entrepreneur, and she had the most interesting story, I felt, about why she became an entrepreneur. And it started out with being in a field, like a football field, at 4:30 in the morning. It's freezing cold. There is a car stereo that's blasting out music. She thinks she is rather crazy to even be participating in this. She said she's in her gym gear with her pajamas still on underneath. She's freezing. And she had to take part in this aerobics class with new colleagues who were with this particular company. And she said, that should have been a real wake-up call that I was not cut out for what was considered the corporate image. And she said when she reflects back on that time, she said in the corporate environment, she really did not like the in-house politics. She said the attitudes of middle management. And she said there was just all this stuff that went on, and it just didn't sit well with her at all. In fact, one day, she walked out of a senior partner's meeting, and this was a global corporate firm, and she said, I walked out. I just quit. I'd had it. I didn't belong in this environment. She said, I walked out with a smile on my face, and she said, I've been smiling ever since. Now, she comes from a background from New Zealand, and she said, I had a good childhood. There was nothing wrong with my life. She said, my family's lived in Australia since she was a teenager. And she said, I really, really had a very, very good life. But she said, that particular day when I was in this corporate activity, She said it was the beginning of the end of my associating with that environment. And she said, one of the things that I have discovered for myself and that I like to share with other people is that you need to be happy every day. She said that, as far as she's concerned, she said, having a job, having all of these wonderful trappings is terrific, whatever it is that really makes you feel good. But what about happiness? She asks the question, why is happiness generally lacking in our thought process? It's a very good question. Why is it so many people, by the time they're ready to retire, let's say they retire in their 60s or 70s, they'll have all kinds of regrets. I wish I'd done this. I wish I'd done that. She said, happiness seems to be elusive. But why? Well, Gemma has some things that she does that really keeps her mindfully present of what happiness is for her. And what they are happiness lists. Have you ever thought of doing something like that? She said she writes the list twice a year, once before her birthday and once before Christmas. She said all it is, it's a list of tangible or intangible things she'd like to have happen to make her happy. Now, she said the key to making this list is not about making a list about material possessions. She said you can put them in if you want. But she said, I write the list so that it helps me focus on what will make me happier than I am at the present time. And she goes into setting goals. She has short-term, middle, medium-term, and long-term goals. She said, I make a point of laughing every day. And she said, sometimes the days are not happy days, but I force myself to laugh. So she fakes it. She said, I'll make this deep, deep, deep belly laugh until I'm finally laughing, just like you do when you're a kid. You'll make faces in the mirror until suddenly you're giggling. It's a shifting of attitude. She also finds that when she meditates, that it helps her. And she said, I don't waste my time with people who are not going to support me and be positive. She said, I want to be in that harmonic where the energy I'm receiving from others and what I give to others is going to be really in a nice flow. And she said, I've also learned to be grateful. She said, I was very fortunate in my youth, and she said, I've been very fortunate as an adult. And she said, I have had my times, but I really appreciate what I've gotten. She said, she's also learned not to have excuses. She said, I've got a lot to be grateful for, and I try to leave the ifs, buts, ands, and maybes behind. If I have a challenge, then I try to work a little bit harder, maybe dig a little bit deeper. She said, I want to keep my focus in front of me, whatever that is. She said, I want to work smarter, not harder. And also, she said, I do not choose to wait. She said her big mistake was when she was in the corporate world and she was unhappy. She stayed in this particular environment that caused her so much undue stress for a good year. And she said, that was a mistake, and I vowed I would not do that again. And she said, lastly, it's being kind, being compassionate, being thoughtful with other people, and also with yourself. She said, there's no secret to what has enabled me to enjoy success. She said, I choose to be happy every day, and I provide my own terms and direction for gaining that happiness. And I thought I'd share it with you because her final statement was, it may not work for everybody, but it works nicely for her. And just as with my guest, Gary, you never know what somebody can teach you. So if you keep your mind open and your attitudes clear and fresh, you're going to find that you're going to be able to learn something from someone just about every day of your life. And isn't that wonderful? You won't have time to get bored. And you can really appreciate what's going on in your life that's enabling you to live it with purpose, passion, and zest. Gemma Cocker is the lady I have been talking about. Well, I know we're just about out of time. Hey, tomorrow we're going to be talking about the Navy SEALs. I hope you can join us. Tell your friends. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And I did have a special chocolate cake recipe for you, but we ran out of time, so I'll have to save it for tomorrow. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, again, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.